Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. We're taking an 11th hour look at where things stand with St. Louis Public Radio political education and criminal justice editor Erica Hunzinger. Erica, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
How are you holding up as we come down to the wire?
We're doing okay. There's been a lot of late nights this week.
Yeah. And I'm sure you've been in contact with Jason Rosenbaum, Joe Manis, and Marshall Griffin all morning long.
That's great.
What are they saying? Has the pace picked up at all?
Pace picked up quite a bit last night. They went until 12 o'clock. The first 3 days, pretty glacial. Only 8 bills sent to Governor Greitens Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday combined. A lot of that due to the chambers adding amendments to each other's bill. There were some filibusters that ended up killing things like the minimum wage ban that they were trying to get passed. But last night there were 15 bills, and just before I walked in here, they sent one to Greitens with the blue alert system, which is creating amber alert type system when a lawmaker or a law enforcement officer is assaulted.
So minimum wage is dead? Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, we believe it's dead, yes. St. Louis Senator Jamila Nasheed filibustered for 2 hours on Wednesday night, and they tabled the bill, and it does not look like they're going to bring it back up.
Are we looking at any kind of a surge this afternoon, would you think?
Certainly. Yeah. There are a ton of things that haven't come up yet. We have the prescription drug monitoring program that has kind of been a football back and forth between the House and the Senate all week. So we're not sure if they're going to bring it up, but we would think so.
Yeah, I've heard, read somewhere that it's unlikely that that will actually pass.
I think that's probably the case, yeah. There's also a couple union bills, anti-union bills that haven't come up yet. One is prevailing wage. One is paycheck protection. We're hearing that those are most likely to come up this afternoon.
What about workplace discrimination?
Workplace discrimination passed on, I believe it was Monday or Tuesday. That bill essentially makes it harder for people to sue for discrimination based on their race, sex, or national origin. That has to be a main factor, not a contributing factor.
So is that on the governor's desk now?
That is on the governor's desk.
Okay, that one kind of slipped by me for some reason, but
it was a late night passage.
A lot of things do. A couple of things that were passed yesterday. I guess the day before there was nothing sent to the governor.
Yes, no.
Yesterday there was this flurry of activity. One is the real ID issue,
which
for people who travel, it's a big deal.
That's correct. Republicans had fought that one for years. It's based on a 2005 federal law that's supposed to be kind of a terrorism fighting measure. Missouri was one of 4 states that had not yet complied with that. So by passing it, it means that Missouri residents come January 22nd will need to have a compliant real ID to get on board airplanes and to get into federal courthouses and onto military bases. The difference with Missouri's bill is that you can either have a compliant license or a non-compliant license. You get to choose.
And if you have non-compliant and you travel, you better bring your passport.
Bring your passport.
That's right.
Or you won't be traveling.
This had this not passed, my impression is that this probably would have led to a special session.
That was the case, yes. Yeah. Greitens and Lieutenant Governor Parson had both said that they would be willing to call a special session to pass it.
Is there anything pending right now, have you heard, that that could possibly lead to a special session if it doesn't pass?
Not today, but I think we'll find that out in the next six hours, certainly.
Sure. Yeah. The zoo tax passed, which directly affects people in this immediate vicinity.
Yes,
that goes to the governor now. 0.8% increase potential in the sales tax.
It's a 0.1%, and that would have to go to St. Louis City and St. Louis County voters. It's not as if we've already got a tax that's coming down. It would be a new one that people would have to vote on.
Okay, well, 6 hours to go.
6 hours.
This got off to a slow start.
Yes.
Well, it didn't get off to a slow start. They got off to a fast start, this legislative session with the right to work and what have you. But it really slowed down. And I think everybody was kind of expecting a kind of a kumbaya session where the Republican governor and the Republican legislature are going to get along, get a lot done.
Right.
Why didn't that happen, I wonder?
Well, I mean, again, like you said, GOP has both chambers for the first time and the governorship since Matt Blunt was in office. And, you know, it turned into a lot of Senate infighting. Some of this came because of Governor Greitens' new nonprofit that kind of pushes his agenda.
Oh, yeah.
And senators started to do some infighting, specifically Rob Schaff. He's a Republican from St. Joseph, kind of got caught in the crosshairs of the nonprofit because they didn't believe that he was supporting what Greitens wanted to pass. So they put his cell phone number out there for everyone to call in an online ad. So I think that some of that has happened, though Jason Rosenbaum spoke with Ron Richard, the Senate pro tem, this week, and he said he's comfortable with what the Republicans have done so far. So they're definitely, you know, trying to make it seem like it wasn't a slow session.
Yeah. One other thing I wanted to ask about before we let you go, and that is the sanctuary city issue. It's one that has particular relevance here in St. Louis because
Correct.
That's a lot of aldermen want to move in that direction. Where is that?
They decided – so we already have a statewide ban on sanctuary cities as it is. There was a measure earlier this week that passed. I don't remember which chamber it's in right now. No one has taken an extra vote on it, but essentially to strengthen – this, my guess is it probably won't come up. We haven't heard anything about that in the last couple days.
This is where the urban-rural divide comes in
yes.
because the rural area definitely is not signed on for something like that.
Correct.
Okay, Erica Hunziker, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed. I know you want to get back to your desk and follow the remaining, 5 hours and 40 minutes, whatever it is. Thank you for spending some
Thank
time
Thank you
with
very
us.
Much.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to turn now to Rachel Lipman, also of St. Louis Public Radio News. She's been working on Metrolink safety and security issues for the last several days. It's a big issue following the shooting deaths of two men, one aboard a Metrolink car and one on a station platform. Rachel, thank you for spending some time with us.
Always a pleasure to be here, Don.
People who run Metrolink are considering all sorts of options, they say, to improve security. What is it that they can and what is it that they can't do?
Well, it kind of depends on who you ask as to what they can or can't do. Right now, there are officers from all three jurisdictions that the line crosses through, which is St. Louis County, the city of St. Louis, and then over into St. Clair County, Illinois. There are officers assigned from those departments to the train system and the platform, but they aren't able to operate outside of their own jurisdictions. So the one thing that we know is coming is a legal agreement between those departments to do what's called cross-deputization. It basically means that if a St. Clair County Sheriff gets on the train at Scott Air Force Base and rides it to Shrewsbury, they can enforce laws, regulations, ordinances along the entire line. They don't have to stop at the border of the jurisdiction. We know they're going to centralize them in a new headquarters near the Del Mar station at DePere, Del Mar, right on the border between the city and the county, and put them under a single commander and a single dispatch. So if you are on the Metrolink train, you'd be dispatched from one central location. The disagreement comes in as to the powers of Metrolink's own security guards. So there's two separate things there as well. There are security guards they contract with, and you see them everywhere. It's usually Securitas or another company. And they wear the uniform of their security company, very clearly are security, just security guards, not sworn police officers. Then Metrolink, Metro Bi-State Development Agency, employs its own public safety force. And they've gotten in trouble from both the county and the State Department of Public Safety for acting too much like police officers when they aren't actually licensed or allowed to perform roles as police officers, such as arresting, writing tickets, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So that's where we stand with safety. We know that we're going to probably get a boost in actual police department presence from the sheriff, from St. Louis, and from St. Louis County, and they're going to be allowed to enforce everywhere on the line.
Sounds pretty unwieldy to me.
It is. I think it is just a nature of creating a government agency system kind of thing. The good news is you don't have all the little municipality police departments involved in this, even though the line cuts through a number of them as they've left that up to St. Louis County.
My impression is that they've stopped writing tickets. It's pulling back from some of the things they formerly
have done? I think it is pulling back
done?
From prosecuting. As I understand it, there's questions about because – of the questions about the authority of these Metrolink employed guards, not the contract guards, as to their authority to do this. And the prosecutors, at least Bob McCullough, has publicly said, I can't prosecute these tickets because they aren't written by an individual with authority to do this. And they don't want to get into a situation where they take a case to court and they have nothing to build it on.
What has this done, or do we know what it's done to ridership, these incidents of late?
I don't think we know yet. There are some sort of like core base of ridership that just has no other way to get around. They have to use it. That probably won't drop off too much. Where you may see the drop off is in sort of voluntary, I'll use it if it is occasionally convenient, but I have other modes of transportation to get around. We haven't seen, or I haven't seen, ridership numbers yet to know if it is going to impact that in any sort of serious way. And obviously, numbers are going to vary voluntary ridership just based on events, based on where stuff is, that kind of stuff. But I did talk to one person in the piece that I did who stopped his voluntary rides. He would use it because it was occasionally more convenient or he wanted to be eco-friendly. He stopped doing it because he said, I don't feel safe anymore. And statistically, it may be safer than driving a car and it may be safer than any other mode, but there is something to feeling safe. And those, I think, are the riders that they're trying to address and work with and get back onto the system or keep on the system.
Speaking of your piece, I found one part of it especially interesting. The woman who is not using her car to save money on gas and is therefore using Metrolink, so that you can save up enough money to go around the world.
And she says, yeah, I've gone to Alaska. She wants to go to the Mediterranean. I mean, that is what she is doing it for. She has been car-free by choice for 20 years.
And that's the value of a system like Metrolink.
Sure.
It's also my understanding, Rachel, that there is going to be an infusion of cash, apparently about $20 million from Bi-State.
Bi-State has put $20 million extra into its budget for next year that it will spend at the request of the law enforcement agencies. It could be on looking at how to put turnstiles on, cameras, just whatever they think can boost public safety. That'll be available starting July 1st.
Turnstiles. This is something that people have talked about a lot. I wonder how effective they are. We both have some familiarity with the subway system in New York, for instance. People jump those turnstiles every day.
I'm not sure I would want to try, but I'm sure they do. They are as more of a fare evasion protection, I think. I had not found or seen anywhere numbers that looked at what they do for public safety. There's some arguments. John Belmar, the chief of the St. Louis County Police, has advanced that it keeps people who just want to go on and cause trouble off if they have to pay, if they have to use it to get through. So it maybe preempts some of the just let's get on the train and you know, cause a ruckus kind of thing. The woman that you were mentioning from the piece who is a transit rider by choice, she said she believes a shooting she witnessed at the Del Mar platform in 2016 might have been stopped if a teen had had to, you know, go through a turnstile to get down to the platform. It slows down impulse, but it doesn't also stop. You know, it's not like there's a metal detector to keep you from getting a gun on the train if you want to go after someone or jump a turnstile, for example.
Has this been a real spate in violence? I mean, obviously, I can't remember two shootings within a couple of weeks of each other.
I think it is the shootings. Yeah. Numbers are hard to come by for crime on the Metrolink trains, just simply because if you're between stops, what's the address that? The info that Metro started putting out again in April just lists, you know, smoking on the train, fare evasion, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. I think part of it was, too, one was a shooting on the train up by the University of Missouri-St. Louis, which is a popular stop, and the other was at another major stop, which is the Busch Stadium.
You know, I think back to the days when they were talking about Metrolink and Metrolink expansion early on, and the people in St. Charles County said, we don't want any part of this because the problems of the city are going to come out to us. And I suppose they're looking at what's been going on recently and saying, we told you so. Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, another person that I spoke to in the piece and is in there, he mentioned, you know what, look, it's no different than crime elsewhere in the city or in the region, that if you have a problem with crime throughout the entire region in general, you're going to have a problem with crime on the Metrolink. The reason you don't see crime on the Metro in London or on the services in Singapore is because there isn't crime elsewhere, as much crime elsewhere in those countries. I'm sure if you looked at the numbers from Chicago, Boston, New York, any of the other big systems, they might potentially match what you see in those cities in general.
Sure. I hadn't planned on taking any calls, but we have a call here with a subject that is interesting enough to pause for a moment. Let's take Ron's call from St. Louis. Ron, go ahead. You're on the air, but make it quick if you would, please.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Very simply, I've taken the light rail a couple times lately from the Devolver, the Central West End downtown, to the hockey game and back. And it's very clear on the way back home, it's this hobbyist to selling drugs on the light rail. Someone gets on at the ballpark, buys his drugs from the man who's sitting right behind me. Then the man gets off again. He goes to the end, turns around, and sells drugs and put it back. And all these things are happening in that area between Barnes Hospital and Bush Stadium, and it's all drugs. These are, we're selling, you know, crack cocaine and meth.
Got it, Ron. Let's see if Rachel has any done any reporting on that.
There is no dispute that there is stuff that happens on the MetroLink. As I mentioned earlier, the same stuff that happens in a general public settings is going to happen on the MetroLink. The question becomes, do you put more police on there to catch it? Where do you target the resources to keep it from happening? Would turnstiles keep that from moving on to the trains, or are they just going to go because they know they have an audience there? It's, you know, if you really want to get down to it, it's addressing crime in the same way that you would address it throughout the rest of the city. MetroLink is unique, I think, only because it's there, it's a unique setting for it, and there's ways that people think you could deal with it differently than you would deal with crime elsewhere.
Rachel, what would you look for as the next step in this whole security story in MetroLink?
Where the $20 million goes, if it really does get dedicated to it, if they keep, if they are able to put more police officers on the train. And I'm also just curious as to kind of where this thing is going with the MetroLink police officers. You know, what and how do any of the departments, the police departments, the three departments, do to try and put a stop to it? I mean, I know that the county police have, you know, taken some reports of these incidents. Do they pass it along to the prosecutor? Does the prosecutor, you know, issue charges? What happens there? Who knows?
Still looks a little
unwieldy.
Stay tuned.
It's this region, Don. It's always unwieldy. Like I said, thank goodness the little municipalities aren't trying to get involved in this.
There you go. Rachel Littman, thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure as always.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.